Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. Hi there, welcome to Sunday Night, and thank you for joining us. Well, it may not be an election campaign yet, but as the politicians evidence by their actions, we've all heard a starter's gun somewhere. Even, it seems, in the churches. Over the past few years, there's been something of a flurry of Christian voices pressing into the political arena. From a resurgent DLP to a Family First in recent elections to the political agenda of the Australian Christian Lobby and the launch last month of the new kid on the block, the Rise Up Australia Party. Well, most of these voices have come from the conservative end of the political spectrum, seeming to define the Christian position as by default belonging to the conservative side of politics. The paradox is, of course, that over the last several federal parliaments, Christians have been as prominent or even more so in Labor governments than they have on the conservative side. Just take, for example, the top two or three positions, Reverend Brian Howe, Deputy Prime Minister, Kim Beazley, leader of the Labor Party, and of course Kevin Rudd as Prime Minister. Well, recently a new Christian lobby appeared. It's called a Progressive Christian Voice, and its agenda is one that distinguishes itself clearly from those who would define the Christians in conservative terms. In a few moments, we'll be joined by a panel concerned to promote this progressive voice, and of course, you too will be able to join the conversation on 1300 800 222. Just write the number down, and I'll let you know when you can give us a call. If you're in Adelaide or Darwin, you might like to do that now because of the time shift difference. 1300 800 222. The rest of the country, just hold your breath for a little while. Coming up in our second hour, we'll be joined first up by the General Secretary of the Australian Catholic Bishops Conference, Father Brian Lucas, to chat about the coming papal conclave and the way it's been handled by we in the media. And then a real high point for us here on Sunday night, British historian Tom Holland, author of such books as Persian Fire, Millennium, Rubicon, and most recently The Shadow of the Sword. He's in Australia at the Writers Festival in Perth and Adelaide, and he popped in to see us during the week, and it'll be the first part of a two-parter that we'll be doing with Tom Holland. That's in an hour or so's time. Then, of course, our regular bits and pieces. The Inquisition, Noel's visit to find the good life with another community in Australia, then some music, and we'll be joined in the chat room where you can vent your opinions on the issues of the week with Bill Ledbetter. Well, a new cross-denominational group has been formed to add to public discourse in Australia. That's from a press release of a Progressive Christian Voice. We want to represent the voice of the Christians who are trying to view life from the future. We want the Australian public to understand that conservative lobby groups might be one expression of the Christian faith, but they are by no means the only expression. They're the words of the president of Christian Voice Australia, the very Reverend Dr. Peter Catt, who is also the Dean of St. John's Anglican Cathedral in Brisbane. And Dr. Peter Catt joins us as one of our panel this evening. Peter Catt, welcome to Sunday Night.
Thanks, John. It's great to be with you.
Joining Peter Catt in our Brisbane studios is the Reverend Dr. Anne Solari, MD, who's an honorary deacon at St. John's Cathedral. Anne, thank you for being there.
Thank you for inviting me.
And in Melbourne, Father Dennis Webster, Anglican vicar at St. Stephen's Anglican Church in Richmond in Victoria, and the Reverend Dr. Morag Logan of the Uniting Church in Victoria. Welcome to both of you.
Good evening.
Thank you.
Well, first, let's talk about this difficult word, progressive. Or no, perhaps I'll go back a step. Why the need for a progressive voice? Peter Catt, give us that, and then we'll get on to what you mean by it. Why the need for a progressive voice?
We figured that the church is a broad church, and it would be a good thing for the variety of Christian voices to be heard in the public sphere. We thought that those who represented a more conservative way of looking at life, we're doing a really good job of getting their voice heard, and we're aware that there are other people in the church who wanted their voice to be recognised as well.
Are you, when you use the word lobby group, having a particular group in mind? That's the Australian Christian Lobby?
We actually think the ACL have done a stunning job representing their constituency, and it's a good model for getting one's voice out there.
Their constituency, though they would claim by their name, is are Australian Christians.
Sure, yes. That is implied by their name. And I guess we don't really want to see ourselves in conflict with the ACL, because there are times when we would be speaking on the same page. We just figured that there are other voices in the church, and those voices should be given some expression.
But you seem to be saying that ACL, by their nature, represents a particular spectrum of opinion and not the broad spectrum of Christian opinion.
Well, they certainly do, and increasingly there are Christians who say that the ACL voice is not their voice, and so we thought the best thing to do was to add to the number of voices in the public sphere, on the basis that the more voices there are, the better the dialogue and the more fruitful the outcome.
Let's then turn to the word progressive. Peter, again, if you could just give us a brief reason why you've chosen this word.
Sure. We like the idea that one can look towards the future, and that the best times for the faith and for human existence are actually ahead of us rather than behind us. And so the progressive Christian voice has the view that we want to see what God is doing in the world and join in, as Rowan Williams would say. And so it's about moving forward. It's a forward movement. And if you like, it's also trying to imagine what it would be like to look back at our time from 20 or 50 years hence and ask the question, what are we doing in our day that we think is fine, maybe for cultural reasons or simply because we've always done that particular thing? What in 50 years' time will people be looking back at us and scratching their head and saying, how on earth did they think they were living out the gospel? In much the same way as we look back at, say, the time of slavery and really can't begin to get our heads around how on earth people thought that that was a good thing to do.
Morag Logan, let me bring you into the conversation here. This word progressive, I mean, whilst it's useful in some ways, does have associations that are a bit difficult, particularly when it comes to the theological arena as distinct from the political arena. In the political arena, it's generally associated with the sorts of things that Peter Catt has outlined to us. But when it gets to the theological arena, it's more associated with the death of God, liberal end of Christianity.
Certainly, I think the word progressive has, within my area, the Uniting Church, it has a range of different definitions and current usages. You know, for some, it has a history back in the 19th century, pre-20th century, in terms of biblical interpretation.
Because in those days it could have been associated with evangelicalism in some ways. You had those progressive evangelicals associated with sort of Wesley and the anti-slavery movement, as Peter Catt has indicated, or Charles Finney in the United States and the full equality of women. Yet progressive became tagged with liberalism and sort of disbelief in some ways, did it not?
I believe so, yeah. And nowadays I think we have a wide range of different meanings of the term progressive, both theologically and politically.
Hmm. Do you think this is a bit of a problem?
In terms of what we're trying to capture is a diversity of Christian voices, the fact that within the Christian churches there are a diversity of different voices. And in that respect, no, I don't think so. I don't think this actually is a problem. But we do need to at least think about definitions. If we're calling for a progressive Christian voice, we need to do some talking about what do we mean by a progressive Christian voice, or are we talking about progressive Progressive Christian Voices adding to the debate.
Mm. Anne Solari, how do you respond to that?
I think being progressive means we're actually willing to look at where we are in time and apply the old stories, look at the old stories, the old beliefs, and think what they mean today. So being progressive means we're not stuck in the past. We're actually moving forward. We're taking God's story with us. We're moving on to join God. It's an onward movement as we understand more, as we relate more to other people, other cultures, as we acknowledge that we're all made in the image of God, not just white Christians.
Yes. Father Dennis Webster, your response to the way in which the word progressive has been used and can continue to be used.
It certainly does represent some problems to some parts of the wider church community, particularly when it's seen as an antithesis to what is conservative. And then by calling it liberal, immediately that has connotations in the wider church community as well. But I think Anne's point is basically the way I view to being progressive is to look at the traditions and what we've learnt from the past and to work out a way theologically to apply that to the present in terms of what John says in Revelations, to hear what the Spirit is saying to the church, because I don't think the Bible finished with the word Amen at the end of Revelation. I think God's still at work. So to be progressive, for me, is to be open to what is the Spirit saying. If we lock ourselves into what was the practice back at the Council of Trent, right back through to this establishment of the Anglican Church here at Augustine, and even go back to, like this morning we had a reading of Joshua and the need to circumcise all the men before they went into Israel. I mean, are we going to really lock ourselves into that past story, or are we going to look at what is at work and how God is working in our community?
That's a big picture interpretation. Peter Catt, it does come down for many people to, what do these people mean? What are they on about? For you, when you have to wrestle with a dilemma about the way the word progressive has been used, particularly in religious terms over the years, what do you mean? What was in your mind when you and your group of friends sat down and discussed the need for an alternate religious voice and you chose the word progressive? Did you mean it in the theological or the political sense?
Definitely the political sense. We were aware that there are lots of progressive Christian groups meeting in all sorts of places, and they tend to have very important conversations, but they are conversations that are internal. So they might be having conversations about the nature of the resurrection or those sort of theological concepts. And we figured that there was a place for a group who wanted to be progressive in a political sense.
So this is good old-fashioned political progressivism?
Absolutely.
Right, right. And that means then an identification of Christianity with, say, the centre-left of politics rather than the centre-right of politics.
I guess in those sort of terms, that's probably where we would be placed. But I guess we really want to be looking at a way to apply the principles of the faith, like love and compassion, along with intelligent debate, opening the way for dialogue, and also being able to occupy the sort of that middle space, if you like, the space in, say, climate change debate, where there's a sense that we need to, there's a grief process going on, that we're mourning over a lifestyle we might lose, and not wanting to be seen as cut and dried on either side of the fence, if you like, actually trying to work the middle way through many of the issues, asylum seekers being another one.
We'll come to some of those issues shortly. Sure. Let me ask another general question of all of you, and please feel free to comment on this one. I mentioned the Australian Christian Lobby before, and you being an alternate to that. We've had a number of groups express themselves on the political stage, the latest being the Rise Up Australia Party of Pastor Danny Naglia in Melbourne. We had Family First a few years ago. What's been the general problem of issue focus from these groups as you perceive it, such as another group is needed? Anne Solari, you first.
Those groups tend to be very definite about what they believe. They do tend to be on the right side of politics, whereas we tend to represent some of the people who don't know the answers, but have thoughts and beliefs. And it's a space where we can juggle the different concepts, the different ideas, without having to say we're absolutely right. We can put points of view forward and can support both sides.
Eventually, though, one has to come down. You must have a specific critique. For example, Dennis Webster, what's caused you to be sufficiently anxious about these groups? What would be your critique of, say, Family First, Rise Up Australia and the ACL? What specific issues have got under your sort of your irritation points?
In my role as a former Vice President of the Council of Churches here in Victoria, I co-authored the press release, which is now rather infamous amongst the ACL circles. And one of the things that we were presented with from some of our constituent churches, and bear in mind there's 30 of them, so if you have a meeting you have 30, at least 30 different opinions on any one subject, politically or theologically. They were concerned, the concern that was presented to us was that there's just one voice out there. It was the go-to organisation. So if you take a program, for example, like Q&A, the only Christian voice that they went to was ACL. And some of our constituent churches were saying, well, because they use the term Christian, that implies that they encapsulate us. So there was a need for us to say, look, hang on, there are other opinions out there.
But what about their opinions did you find discomforting? I mean, was it that they had a don't let me put words in your mouth, but was it that they had a too narrow a moral perspective of things like sexual ethics, of climate change, or was it the style of the sorts of issues they picked? I mean, what was it? What is it about those groups? Is it the broad policy or the particular issues?
Well, I agree with what John said earlier, that Peter said earlier, regarding some of the things that they're saying I have no problem with, and I think they do a fantastic job. However, they are rather narrow. Yes, for some of the constituent churches, the narrow teaching of sexuality, at the time the marriage debate was on the agenda, so the sanctity of marriage became a big issue, and for some of the constituent members of the VCC at the time, the presentation that they were only hearing in the media as being the Christian churches was not where they're at. So as a council, it was decided we need to say, hey, hang on, there is a diversity of opinion, and one of the things that we try and do at the council is to provide a safe opportunity for people to come together and talk about it.
Morag Logan, what's got you sufficiently irritated to feel you need to stand up with a new group?
I think it's something of an intersection between broad policy and particular issues. I mean, when a group is standing up with the broad policy that we are speaking with the voice of Christians in Australia and are speaking out on particular issues, and I find that myself in profound disagreement with the opinions that are being expressed, that causes me to stand up and say, well, wait a minute, I have a Christian voice too, and your voice is not my voice. I have different opinions, and again, around a whole range of political issues and climate change and sexuality and marriage and so on.
And you feel your particular perspective is sufficiently widely shared among fellow Christians as to merit that voice being specifically articulated?
I also don't know that it matters how widely shared or not. Right. If I stand here as an individual Christian, the freedom of the individual conscience before God, and I as a Christian profoundly and deeply believe some particular thing on some particular issue, does it really matter how many others I carry with me? I still have a right to claim that as a Christian voice.
Well, let's pick up some of the issues in just a moment. You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia. We're talking about the launch of a progressive Christian voice, a voice that's saying there's too much noise on the conservative or right side of Australian politics from Christians. We need to hear a few voices on the left or the more progressive side of Australian politics. What's your opinion? 1-300-800-222 is the number to ring. 1-300-800-222, and we'll now get down to one or two particular issues. Morag, let me stay with you for a moment. The whole of much of the debate over the last 2 or 3 years has focused on sexual ethics, whether it's been a continuing undertone of the abortion debate or the gay marriage debate or on sexual relations debates, on homosexuality. That sort of sexual morality issue is one which has been consistently there as part of these parties' agenda. Is that what you mean by too narrow in some ways, or is it a particular focus in sexual issues?
Well, I do think the views that I have heard expressed from the Australian Christian lobby and other voices claiming to be the Christian voice in Australian politics are too narrow for viewpoints that I would hold and viewpoints that I believe exist amongst faithful Christians within the churches. I would not limit it to that, but I think that is one area where, yes, the idea of Christian voices in Australia can be particularly limited. Public debate.
What would your view, and I'm not trying to tie everybody to this position, but what would your view, for instance, be on the gay marriage debate?
I think that's a very interesting debate within progressive Christian voices in Australia, within Christian voices in Australia. I, as a personal view, I think we as churches need to think very deeply as a society is considering what do we believe are the patterns of marriage and the patterns of marriage that we'll carry into the future. And what do we think is the role of the church in politics and in relation to the state with regards to marriage? Do, in fact, we want to move to a position where the churches need to be able to say, whatever their range of different views are, within our church, there are certain relationships that we will bless, that we will bring into the life of this Christian community, under the sight of God. There are others that we will not. Independent of that, the state is doing something about what relationships it will bless and honour and give certain legal sanctions to and legal rights to. Do those two actually have to have any particular relationship? Or can the church actually say, well, we as this type of church with this type of voice will bless these relationships quite independent of what legal status has or what status it has under the law?
You're bringing there a degree of sophistication to the debate, which by implication you're saying hasn't been there. There's been an absolutist tendency in the debate in some ways from Christian voices.
I believe so. We have said marriage is understood to be, you know, one man, one woman, no other options, and that's what the state should determine. There is room, I think, for subtlety, for saying that, well, within the churches we have some communities of Christians who will say we will honour all sorts of faithful relationships between people, ongoing relationships, lasting, etc.
So the criteria there for you is fidelity in relationships?
Fidelity, longevity, and a certain, I would go beyond that as well, to say a certain type of relationship, that we will be talking about relationships that are non-coercive, relationships in which both partners are equals, relationships which are long-lasting and fruitful, relationships in which both partners can play an equal part within the Christian community. Mm-hmm. And those sorts of relationships can be honoured whether the two people in them are male and female or whether we have single-sex relationships. And we might, within the churches, say we will honour and bless these type of relationships as a whole, whatever the state is doing about the marriage and marriage laws.
Does anybody else?
Other parts of the churches might want to say we will only honour relationships between men and women, no matter what the church wants to say. It's a matter of within the whole range of Christian voices about where do churches sit in relation to the state on marriage law.
Because on these laws, these sorts of laws, it's not just an issue for Christians anymore, is it? You're having a growing Muslim community in Australia, and their view on what are appropriate marriage laws within their religious community are quite different in some Muslim traditions than they are in others. And let me bring another voice into the conversation here. Peter Catt, how would you see this distinction between the churches able, or religious bodies able to make rules for themselves as voluntary associations about what sort of sacraments of marriage they will have, that's been quite distinct from those established by the state?
I think that's a really important distinction. That marriage as practiced in Australia is already not what many churches would define as marriage. Marriage in Australia is a contract between two people that can be terminated with a year's notice, and many churches hold that marriage is something other than that. And so I think Morag's introduction of that level of sophistication in the debate is exactly the sort of thing we want to see, in that there is a debate about whether we should have, say, same-sex marriage in Australia, and that needs to be conducted separately to the conversations the churches have internally. So I've advocated openly for same-sex marriages to be practiced in Australia, and then have said in my own church community we need to have a dialogue about how we, as the Anglican Church in Australia, respond to that, and that the two conversations are actually interrelated but quite separate as well.
There's been a bit of a shock to some church circles in England on this matter recently, when not only did the British Parliament take a view, which surprised many, but a leading evangelical pastor, Steve Chalk, associated with the worldwide anti-trafficking movement and other things, came out saying he was prepared to bless a gay marriage, which is something that hasn't happened in Australia from that side of the church at all. So I guess our perspective has been sort of narrower than we're seeing in some parts of the world.
The Progressive Christian Voice has members in it that would their affiliation would probably surprise some other people, in that there are members of Baptist communities and other communities that are often seen as conservative. And I guess one of the things we're trying to get people to see is that the church isn't monochrome, and it's not necessarily predictable either, that there is a diversity of voices, and those voices actually start to enrich the public discourse. Just bringing out that subtlety in terms of the marriage debate is a real blessing, I think, because it adds a sophistication that takes the debate or the dialogue or the discussion out of really simplistic one-liners into discussions about how we honour people and honour their life experience, and how we as a pluralistic country live in honour of that reality, rather than trying to impose a one-size-fits-all dynamic on people.
I mean, yes, because, of course, in that too, you could argue that enhances the depth of the Christian understanding, because the church itself is taking on that duty and obligation for Christians, not for the whole of society.
Yeah, indeed.
Mm. Yes. And, Solari, your view on this?
I think we have to remember that the church is lagging decades behind the rest of the community on some of these decisions. As a doctor, I'm working out in the community with people, and issues on sexuality and relationships in most of the groups of people I work with have been sorted out a long time ago, and relationships are accepted as being real and lasting and positive. And as a church, we are really only just getting to the stage where we talk about it. And as progressive Christians, we can recognise that and allow that to influence what we say, what we think, what we believe, because we can actually integrate that with the church, with the Christian story, and by debate and thought and prayer come to an answer that is growing and changing as we change and as our communities change, both Christian communities and our outside church communities.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. Our guests are the Reverend Dr. Peter Catt, Dean of St. John's Anglican Cathedral in Brisbane and President of A Progressive Christian Voice, the Reverend Dr. Anne Solari, Honorary Deacon at St. John's Cathedral in Brisbane, Father Dennis Webster, Vicar of St. Stephen's Anglican Church at Richmond in Melbourne, and the Reverend Dr. Morag Logan of the Uniting Church in Australia in Victoria. You'd like to join us, wouldn't you? 1-300-800-222. We're taking your calls. Now, we're going to pick up some more issues as we go on, but we will take a couple of calls right up because we've got a number of calls on the board. So let's say hi to Shane in Mornington, who wants to pick up some elements of the discussion. Hello, Shane. Welcome. Shane, can you hear us?
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, would you like to say?
Look, I love the discussion. You'll have to excuse me. I'm a very simple person. But I believe that just Christianity's got a bit too complex and I suppose a bit vague in its message out in the community. I work in the community myself and I see a lot of people seeking the perspective of Jesus Christ, but they don't seem to be getting the message from the church or generally within the community that they're in. And I find a lot of people in the community that I work with, they're in desperate need to actually understand Jesus' message, but there doesn't seem to be many people out there actually teaching it.
Now, there is a question that sets a cat right in the middle of these pigeons. Who wants to have a go at that? In honour preferring one another, Dennis Webster,
I knew you were going to do that. Hello, Shane. Thank you for that. I think it's a very important question. And one of the things that I do particularly want to pick up on is that there are people out there who are trying to make the church engage and teach and encourage. And sometimes that's through the work that they do, the openness of the people just to come off the street and say, tell me the story, or will you listen to me? They're all very important. And I think one of the things that's happened is if you have a lobby group which closes down all conversation, it's very hard when the churches start to argue with each other in what you call the complex issues to hear a clear voice. And one of the things I guess we're trying to say at the moment is we do need that clear voice and we want that to be heard.
Anybody else anything to add there?
I agree that we shouldn't try to be too complex. I think love is the heart of the matter, really, and certainly when I'm talking with people and they're trying to work their way through some dilemma, I get them to reflect on the simple question, well, what is the loving way through this?
Yeah, nice. I agree.
Shane, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We will move on. Let me just ask one other question while we're on this. That theological point you touched on there, Peter Catt. For many Christians, when they talk about progressivism, they link it to the notion of God's care for the earth. Now, we can speak on that in terms of creation theology, and most people have heard of that. You know, God loves the world, so we need to care and be stewards of creation. But others actually put it and focus it where Shane has, onto the person of Jesus Christ, in particular what's called in theological terms the incarnation. That is, God so cared for the world that he sent his son into the world. And that means not just a symbol about death and resurrection, but something about the world itself, the goodness of the world and the care for the world. The incarnation,
sure.
I guess.
The incarnation, that's at the heart of what I think is important in the faith. It really is about matter mattering, as I think William Temple said.
And Paul Collins.
Yes. And the idea I'm actually also deeply inspired by Teilhard de Chardin, who has the idea that the body of Christ is expanding to take in the whole of the created order.
The cosmic Christ.
The cosmic Christ. And so our reverence for creation is reverence for Christ. And so we do well if we believe in the divine and the divine presence in things, we do well to honour that presence in the created order and therefore the way we treat it.
Shane, thank you. Please.
Sorry, I wanted to come in well, that that particularly when we're looking at environmental issues and care for creation in terms of incarnation and incarnational theology, I think it's also really important that the other side of incarnation is also transcendence, that that we believe in a God and a reality that is greater than ourselves. And when we look at issues that are difficult for us to tackle in this world, issues like climate change, issues like environmental destruction, where we might act in our lives and in our world for a better reality for this creation for generations later than ourselves, it's an important resource, I believe, that Christian faith brings to Australian society and to the world, that we are a group of people who believe in transcendence, that that importance of incarnation is that it is the transcendent God who is present in our reality, that we are acting on behalf of the transcendent God and a reality and a vision of what creation is meant to be that is much greater than ourselves. So even if we can't realize those issues for ourselves in creation, we are acting on behalf of that and in that sense of transcendence in our understanding of incarnation.
That is a God who has worked through history, that is from the past to the future and across the universe.
Indeed.
Time and space.
Indeed, and we are called to be part of that reality as we care for the world in the state that it is in now.
Let's go to Fred in Blacktown. Hello, Fred, because what we've just been talking about seems to pick up some of the things you'd like to address.
Yes, thanks, John. Thanks for taking my call. I was just very interested in the discussion. I just wanted to get a feel from the panel members what they thought the extent of, I guess, the progressive Christianity was in Australia and what they see as any emerging trends in there. I mean, I consider myself a progressive, but I guess the figures I've seen, say, from the States about the evangelical left and the Catholic left, would probably constitute about 15 to 20% of the all Christians. I was wondering if they felt the similar figures in Australia, or they got any figures at all, and also about the ongoing trend. I mean, I was actually rather startled to hear Andrew West on another program, who's the religious affairs.
Yes, the religion and ethics report.
He was on a program a few weeks ago, and he believes that, for example, in the Catholic Church, the laity are becoming far more conservative because of this influx of migrants who generally come from traditional countries like Philippines and India. And that, they're sort of replacing some more progressive Christians. And his message was to those Catholics interested in women or married priests that they should go and join the Anglicans. So I was wondering what they feel about all that.
Yes, is the complexity, that is the cultural context of the church, changing? And is that having an impact? That is, are conservative voices resonating more with the congregations? Who wants to have a go at that one? Morag, let's go with you. You haven't had a word for a moment or two, and then Peter, we might hear from you.
Gosh, I think it's very hard to say, really. Certainly we don't have, we don't go out in our churches and do opinion polls.
No, it's an anecdotal observation.
Yeah, certainly.
So what's your sense, I guess?
My sense is, within the Uniting Church, that a lot of progressive voices are more in the silent majority, that this whole range of people who are standing in the space where we are the people who on a lot of issues are not sure. We are still exploring that openness to the future. And I think a lot of our people are there.
Let me inject a provocative note based on my anecdotal experience of what happens on a program like this. Over the years, I've had more and more people get irritated by what they see as a narrow public Christian voice and a lack of comment from groups like the Australian Council of Churches, for whatever reason, and them saying, look, I used to go to church, but... And that's becoming... And they're not saying they're leaving Christianity or leaving religion, they're just saying, I can't cope with going to church anymore. And part of that is about the attitudes they hear expressed more and more at church. Peter Catt, what do you think?
Well, I certainly have a sense that there is a very large group of people who want to hear their voice reflected in the public sphere, and that's certainly why the Progressive Christian Voice was launched. The only survey I'm aware of that gauged where Christian communities were on any issue that sort of is a litmus test, if you like. I think there was a Galaxy poll done on same-sex marriage and of people who said they were churchgoers, and the majority of people who answered that poll were in favour of same-sex marriage, which to me says that there are a lot of people who are at least pragmatic progressives, if not full bottle progressives, in the churches, and their voice isn't out there yet, or their voice, I'm hoping that we are in part giving them a voice.
Well, there may be, just for information's sake, there may be an opportunity to get a better understanding of that, because the National Church Life Survey over this year, I'm told, will be releasing periodically survey data on Christian attitudes in the political arena, particularly on things like climate change and other things that taken as part of their broad-ranging survey of churches taken in conjunction with the census this year. So it'll be something to look forward to during the year.
Yeah, that'll be great.
You might find some interesting material. Thanks for your observations there, Fred. We will move on. Lots of other callers on the board. Let's go to Glenys in Hobart. Ah, we've lost Glenys. She's dropped away from us. To Chris in Nambucca. Hello, Chris. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you. Yeah, my problem is I haven't actually heard anything progressive being said so far on the show.
Oh, what's progressive for you?
Well, you're talking a lot of mealy-mouth stuff about debates and a few statements that I would term as conservative statements, such as, I can't remember who said it, but someone earlier who stated that with climate change, we needed to have a sort of a grief about the effect upon mankind, etc., etc., but, you know, talk about adapting it. You know, progressives do things. Progressives don't just talk about debate. You know, the revolutionary theologians of South America were progressives. You know, where are the Christians and where are the churches who are acting and not just talking? And not, you know, the only comments that are coming out from the churches are right-wing comments. People like Powell. You know, where's the progressive talk and action from the churches?
Progressivism needs to be associated with action. Will, who's going to be the first cab off the rank?
Yeah, I'll go with that.
Yes.
I think you're quite right. And it's one of the things that, as far as I'm concerned, where I'm working here in Richmond at the moment, we're action-based. We're working in food security issues. We've had people go to the immigration tribunal and make representation. We're involved with the council, we're involved in emergency ministry. Perhaps one of the weaknesses we have is we don't always go out there seeking publicity for what we do, but we are out there, we are doing it, and our progressive nature says that I need to, say if I'm out there doing something, I need to sit and listen, I need to be engaged with the people at where they are. And I think that's if we go back to the incarnational Christ, go into the world. I guess I'm not one to go out there and say, hey, look at all these wonderful things I do. But in terms of getting that out into the mainstream, perhaps the church could pick up a few things from some of the other lobby groups around who are very good at saying what they're up to.
Well, let's talk about a few issues then specifically. We've only got 5 minutes or so left, so let's canvass a few specific issues and maybe we'll have a chance to get a call or two in before the end of the program. Chris, thanks for your call. Let's take some issues. Political ethics, that's one that the media is constantly caterwauling about, and in some parts is part of the same vicious circle. That is that everything's concentrated on the gladiatorial context at the moment, and there's nothing to do with policy, and this is having a corrosive effect on our political structures. Hence you get corruption in the Labor Party in New South Wales with Idi Abid, or stuff at the federal level. How do you view the question of political ethics? How do we reform political ethics as one of the key debates? Peter Catt.
It's a good question, and it's one of the ones that's engaging us at the moment. And it's engaging us because we think that democracy itself can imperil itself if it becomes toxic. And so one of the things we would like to see explored is the political class actually having a conversation amongst themselves about how they would like to manage the media, and the media to come in on that conversation eventually, because there seems to be some sort of mad relationship at the moment between political reporters and politicians that is really driving people to despair. And we really do have some incredibly tough issues to tackle, like climate change being the major one, and certainly we believe that climate change is real and has to be tackled. How do the political class, if you like, help themselves get out of the current dilemma that they and the press together have created?
It seems to be a dance of death, because at the same time you've got a crisis in, not just in politics but in the media. You have newspapers, serious newspapers such as broadsheets like the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, going to tabloid because there's a money problem. That results in less in-depth political analysis and more gladiatorial contests.
And shock jocks being named as bullies. It's a very interesting time.
Anyone else want to make an observation there? All right, let's move to another issue linked to that. The media ownership and opinion shaping. Media ownership, that an interest in Australia? Is that a critical issue? I mean, we have constant stories about 70% of the press in Australia being owned by one media organisation. Do you think that's having an impact on our political processes, and the government's having a long-term media inquiry which gets bashed around every now and again?
I'm happy to come in there again. I think our whole climate change debate has been shaped in a most pear-shaped sort of way by the influence of the climate, the way the climate deniers have got so much traction, and unwarranted traction, I have to say. So I think there are serious questions to be explored in terms of media ownership and whether we're actually creating a democracy and allowing people to make informed decisions.
Morag Logan, let me ask you on another issue. Let's take education, for example. Church and religious schools, they could come under a bit of a hammering from the Gonski review if it's implemented in full bore. You could see money transferred away from church schools and from some Christian schools, even though it won't be in real dollars, but it will accrue over the years to be a net loss over the years. Do you think the churches have been a bit selfish on this one?
I'm not sure what to say on this one. Within the Uniting Church in the state of Victoria, we have some very polarised positions around within the church and within the state around the church schools. I think there are a number within our churches who would say that the government might take, or the Gonski review implementation might take money away from a number of church schools, and there are some within the churches who would say that that might be a good thing in some of our church schools, which have enormous resources. On the other hand, within Victoria, I think, and within our own church, we've seen the folding of a number of church schools and a number of independent schools, to the extent that I think one of the things that is an open question within Victoria is the whole model of community-based schools that are trying for a low-fee structure of community-based schools in growth corridors in Melbourne. And I think there are a number of them that have folded in recent times, a significant enough number that it can't simply be put down to poor management within the private school sector. I think that whole model is under question.
We've run out of time. We've only got a minute to go. Anne Solari, you give me one word issue that you think's a critical one for you.
Homelessness.
A progressive voice on homelessness from the churches. And Dennis Webster, a voice for you. What's your number one issue for that? If you had to put one up the flagpole?
Integrity, particularly the integrity of those who are unemployed. Mm.
On Sunday night, a discussion about a progressive Christian voice. You might want to pick up elements of this discussion in our final hour when Bill Ledbetter will join us. But if not, dig around on the web. We'll put up a web address for a progressive Christian voice on our Sunday night's webpage. Thanks to the Reverend Dr. Peter Catt, to the Reverend Dr. Anne Solari, to Father Dennis Webster, and to the Reverend Dr. Morag Logan. This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.